it's all gone quiet. Okay, so here's some madness for you. So I've been a train geek for quite a while. Sorry, laptop too far away. So I've been a train geek for quite a while. One advantage of being a dad is that I now get free footplate rides at railways. And now that I've got children, I kind of want to make models that I can play with them. Or at least I've got an excuse to do that anyway. And of late, I've been on this sort of journey to fall back in love with my hobby, which is model making. And I'm either bored by these really hard to see and hard to make kits, which are, which are etched brass, and it's like origami, but with the added danger of hot solder or super glue, which means that you just burn your fingers all the time. Alternatively, there are really, really rubbishy kits that you buy and then you want to throw at the person who made them. So I've been trying to think about what could we do better. And the basic problem is that we started off with sort of Hornby models like this, and then the trade press bashed all the manufacturers so badly that we ended up with really lovely models like this, which really aren't suitable for playing with children. And normally, even if you're an adult, you break them when you get them out of the box. And I loved making Airfix kits, so I was kind of interested to sort of see what we could do around that. So I was doing loads and loads of thinking, and then something amazing happened. And the amazing thing that happened, and we'll get to it later, is that these three engines that left the UK in the 1960s came home again. And we'll get back to why it's exciting in a bit. But it's inspired lots of thinking. So first of all, I tried to see if you could actually make a 3D printed kit for one of these. This is a, surprise, nobody in the audience shouted it out yet. This is a De Norwick slate quarry wagon, obviously. And the quarry that own these would have about sort of 1,000 of them, and they'd make them in their own workshops. And so if you're going to model this quarry, you need to make quite a lot of them. So 3D printing looked really interesting. So I went and I took loads and loads of measurements and loads of pictures, and then got somebody who is very good at 3D modeling, not me, to make a model. And we then compared it to the published plans, and it looked good. In fact, it's better than the published plans, which is great. He then asked me how to split it up into a kit, and I said, you know what, I'm a whiz with Photoshop, you'll love this. And I coloured it in a horrible set of garish colours. And he then sarcastically sent me back it all split up into the same garish colours. And then we did a few fixes, and we put it on a sprue. We ordered it from Shapeways. And then I made one. And then I took it back to meet the original wagon, because that's what you do. And the great thing about 3D printing, I suddenly realised, was I could actually have it any size I wanted. Which is really, really important if you're a model railway fan, because some people go, oh, I want to make the really tiny ones, and other people going, I've got a big garden and I want a steam engine to pull my large trucks around. And then we did something silly, which was we sent one to this man who you might recognise at a conference. Sir Tim Berners-Lee got into electronics through railway engineering. So there we go. That was fun. And then again, I got a bit sidetracked. And this time I got sidetracked because I caught chickenpox in one of my children. And if you're an adult and you catch chickenpox, you sleep, basically. You sleep quite a lot. You wake up. You normally hallucinate a tiny bit because it's horrible. And then you go back to sleep again. And so I started thinking about one of these engines that had come back. And this is Winifred. And this is Winifred working in the quarry, and she finished working in 1965. She was made in 1885, and she's effectively a Victorian-era dumper truck. And she survived that long because of make, do, and mend and engineering culture. And then in 1965, they decided they wanted diesels, and this man called Fife Robertson, who was a very famous BBC presenter, did effectively what was an advert for the Penryn Railway, selling its engines. An American antiquities dealer saw it, rushed down, bought six of them, as you do, and shipped them over to America in 1965, where one of them was bought by the man who owned the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And he had a very unsuccessful museum for 2 years, and then put the engine into dry storage for 40. And then it came back. And if you saw the pictures of it coming back, you realise that actually it hadn't changed in all that time. So it's effectively a time capsule, the most amazing one. And it's going to be restored to steam. But when they restore engines, they normally do all of these things. So it would not be a time capsule for long. So I started thinking, when I had chicken pox, be really great if I could find out if we could laser scan, obviously, this steam engine. And I got in touch with the guy who owns it and said, could you do that? And then promptly fell asleep again. And then I woke up and there was an email from him. And he said, yes, brilliant idea, that's great. And I was so excited, I fell asleep again. And then I emailed him back and said, great, well, let's talk. And so about 2 months ago, for about 3 days, I had possibly the best desk in the world ever. This is in the engine sheds in somewhere unpronounceable near Barla in Wales. And what we realized was that those 40 years when Winifred was in this dry storage in America hadn't changed at all, that actually the world had completely pivoted. So you've got computers and, you know, lasers are now commonplace, and digital photography, all these things that didn't exist before. So it kind of feels like we've been introducing Winifred to tech. So we've had lots of sort of friendly robots in her house. So the first one of these is the Gigapan camera. For those of you who don't know, this is a product of the Mars missions where they had really rubbish digital cameras and they had to have a robot to do lots of stripes and pictures and then stitch them together again. And so we've done that, but with a steam train. Thank you, Mars mission. That was really handy. So we lit her and we took loads and loads of pictures. That one always hurts everyone's eyes. And what comes out at the other end is a 508 megapixel image of the engine, where you can sort of pretty much see individual flakes of rust, which if you're interested in this stuff, as I am, is really important. We actually got a bit of a break yesterday. I was up there again, and for once it didn't rain. And so we were able to take her outside and do the side of her that we'd never managed to do before. And if you start comparing this picture now against the pictures of her in the quarry, she really hasn't changed at all. It's an incredible time capsule. And there are people from the National Railway Museum there on Monday who were just completely shocked by the condition. And for people of my generation who never saw these things working, it's like somebody has just dumped a time machine on us. It's quite amazing. So this is one of the images that we stitched together. So it's a 36 megapixel image, and that's pixel for pixel what we get off the camera. So you can see lots of patina and you can see lots of scratches. And it feels quite emotional. You can sort of see almost the hands of the driver on them. You can see these wonderful bits of make, do, and mend engineering. Nobody would bend a piece of pipe that way nowadays because you'd have a tool to do it. You've got the soot and the ash and the coal and the slate still on the footplate. And one of my favourite bits is this bit here, where this is basically rust where the driver's foot rested as he drove the engine every day. So the social history starts shining through, like where the workshop made a new tank and they just welded two standard lengths of steel together to do it. And you can actually, on this, we were looking at it yesterday, you can see on here the original lining from 1885. Which is quite an incredible historical document. And you can see occasionally where she's bashed into the Welsh hillside. You can see early graffiti. So this was actually, they swapped the boiler of this engine with another one, and this was the original driver. So, second robot, laser scanner. You might think it's going to go all Tron-like now. You're going to be sorely disappointed. I was. We'd have to put all the lines in on post-production, really, on this. You occasionally see a little blue flash. That little blue flash, I took about 300 photos to try and get one where it flashed, or at least where I caught it. They put lots of white balls around, and these are of known size and known reflectivity, and they're basically to triangulate the space that's in and to give you a sense of scale between the object and distance and the laser scanner. We're working in quite cramped conditions, and this for me is the moment where Winifred actually became a digital thing. This was the first scan that we did where sort of out of all of the data you suddenly got this three-dimensional object appearing. And I can now stop talking and just do this. So this is LiDAR data. So this is a point cloud, so it's why it's slightly transparent. these are the points that come back off the engine. Again, you can start to see wear marks, you can start to see condition. There's actually colour data that comes with it as well. And the guys who have been doing the scanning with us have now produced a 3D model of the engine. This is a perfectly accurate geometric model. It's an engineering model, so it doesn't contain all of the dents and things like that. We're now putting them back in. And we're breaking their computers quite nicely, which is quite fun. You can see how much detail you get in the cab of it. Usefully, these engines don't have a cab. The drivers prefer to drive them without a cab because they had better visibility in the quarries, which, having been on one of them yesterday in the pouring rain in Wales, must have been absolute hell, you know, halfway up one of these enormous mountains. And now we started putting some of the dents back in. So we've taken some of the laser data and we're starting to mesh the dents in. It's already such a complicated model that actually once they put that in, they couldn't really turn it round much anymore. So we're going to have to wait for the computers to get a bit better. So what do we do with it? Well, we ordered one. Of course we did. And it came back from Sculptio. This is 1 in 25 scale. We actually have it here. So that's... So my wife looked at me as if I was a bit mad when I showed her this. She thought it was wonderful. And she said, "What's that?" And I held it up and I said, "That's data." Because that's how it feels to me. You know, not a single human hand has measured this on its way. And so it feels quite special. We're now trying to work out what we do with it. I mean, we're gonna make kits out of it, which is gonna be fun. But we can do even more fun stuff. So you can sort of see it closer up. I've got a few pictures. Thank you. So these are all the details on the back head. This latch we'll come back to. It's quite important. And then the front of it. And obviously we took it back to Wales. So this is one of the best railway journalists in the country, who we saw yesterday, who nearly fell over when we showed him that. Couldn't quite understand what was going on for half the afternoon after we'd showed it to him. And here's what we're now calling Digifred on top of Winifred. And we posed her with a Welsh mountain, because you do that sort of thing. So that's a 1 in 25th scale model. Kind of gets interesting when you think about what you can do with the data and the different sizing. So one of the things that we've been talking about is how you can use this data in a museum context. So we've now got incredibly good colour data and incredibly good geometry data. So we could, in theory, print out another Winifred and put that in a museum and let you clamber over it and enjoy what it's like to stand on one of these engines. We're also looking at whether we can make half-size cabs for kids to stand in, because it would then be the right height for them to pull the regulator and to pretend they're firing the engine. You get really lovely interactive exhibits. Because let's face it, kids have grown up with swipey touchscreens. So the last thing you want to do is put a swipey touchscreen in a museum, because they'll just go, huh? You know, it's like I grew up going to the science museum, pressing buttons and understanding engineering that way. And touching a swipey touchscreen doesn't do that at all. But then the other thing is... So once you started thinking about printing it one-to-one scale, it gets interesting. So we come back to the latch. And here is one. And we held it up against Winifred to make sure we got all the data right. And it fits just fine. The shape isn't perfectly right because the shape's been worn away. And this is when we bring the geometry data back in. And it starts getting more interesting. One thing that Winifred does need is a new smoke box door. The handy thing about smoke box doors is they take absolutely no pressure at all, but it's got some holes in it, and so she won't steam properly. So what we're going to do is take all of the laser data, which has got all the pits and the scarring and the bits where it's got rusted paintwork and the paintwork's burnt and they've painted again, things like that, all the patina, and we're going to make a new one. But instead of actually spinning a brand new one out of steel, which is what they normally do, and these things are like the faces of engines, and you know, if we put a brand new face on this old engine, it would look like an American sort of housewife who's had one too many facelifts. So we're going to take the data with all the pits and all the scars, digitally fix those holes and print a brand new stainless steel smoke box door. I was hoping we'd have a stainless steel one of these by tonight, but it's stuck in customs. The things they never tell you about doing stuff with atoms compared to websites is that customs... I really hate customs now. The number of times I get a thing saying, we've tried to deliver this thing, but we can't because customs has impounded it for a while and they want you to pay for it or tell us why you want it or whatever. But the plan is to print a brand new smoke box door in stainless steel and paint it exactly like it is. And then when the engine is put back together, using all the data that we've got as a guide, in exactly the same condition as she is now, but working, then we'll have done a really good job of restoring her for other generations to enjoy this amazing time capsule that's there. I just wanted to say a few thanks, because this has been quite a lot of collaborations. So we've had lots of help from Sculptio and Shapeways and from MakerBot. Vijay Paul is the guy who does all of our kit modeling. Digital Surveys did the scan for us. Julian Burley's the nutter who brought the engine back from the States. Wonderful man. Alice Taylor and the Makelab crew have given lots of advice and help, and they actually printed this one. Dean's done lots of identity work for us for what we're going to do with this stuff next. Dan Crowe's the CTO of Songkick and is a huge train fan who came and helped on the laser scanning. And then the different museums who've helped, so the Barlow Lake Railway and the Welsh Slate Museum, have been amazing. And then Kay Thaney, who was our kit mule to take the kit out to Tim Berners-Lee. So thank you very much.